What's up, everybody? Armand here, back with another episode. Today's guest, we have Charles Breck. He's the founder of Legislate, which is an end-to-end contract platform for non-lawyers. They give lawyers back their time by helping do the contracts that aren't really high priority for these lawyers, but it's still really important for small businesses to do. He's a really smart guy. I enjoyed talking to him. I learned a lot about what it's like to be a first-time founder. This is the first company he's done. And in his free time, he likes to golf and go for jogs. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Play Hard Podcast.
Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard.
Sweet.
Work hard, play hard.
Yeah, all right. With that, let's get started. Charles, how's it going?
Yeah, good, thank you. How are you?
Doing well. I'm doing well. Yeah, it's been a solid morning. Pretty excited. And I was looking forward to this episode. I was looking into your company and it's really interesting, especially. So I'll do a quick intro. This is Charles, the founder of Legislate. Am I saying that right?
Yep.
And you're a legal tech company making contracts that's making machine learnable contracts for non-lawyers. Did I get that right?
Yeah. So effectively, if you think about contracts, they're legal documents that, you know, have legal consequences. And typically you would get a lawyer involved to make sure that, you know, what you're entering to, first of all, satisfies what you want, but also if it's good for you. But not everyone has access to a lawyer and not all businesses have legal teams. And so the only way really to empower those business teams or non-lawyers to create contracts by themselves is by using technology. And you can only really use technology if effectively you're dealing with data objects. And so that's what we've done. We've made contracts machine readable so that technology can process them.
And do you have a background in law, or is this like a problem that you saw and you wanted to solve yourself?
Exactly. So I'm not a lawyer. I'm not pretending to be a lawyer. Luckily, we've got a great legal team for that. But in my previous role, I was doing business development and was the point of contact between our legal team and our client's legal team. And I just found that I was a middleman. So I was basically exposed to a lot of contracts, exposed to a lot of the amendments, and then realized actually I'm spending too much time waiting and we should just automate a lot of these steps.
Oh, so your goal is to like automate a lot of the contracts that go through so that you don't need an actual person, like a lawyer per se, to go through it.
Yeah, we want to ultimately streamline processes so that there's less time waiting for can I do this, can I do that type of decisions. Our technology, everything that you can do with our technology is already within a, you know, okay and good framework. So then the focus and the energy can then be more around, you know, are these terms actually good for me? What do they mean? And then you can sign the contract effectively.
Are lawyers kind of like a closed off? What's it like going into an industry that, the way I see it from an outsider looking in, it's like, do lawyers let non-lawyers into that industry? And if not, like what is it like not being a lawyer and then doing this company that's kind of like disrupting their space?
So I think I wouldn't say we're disrupting lawyers or legal teams. We're not trying to replace them. And I think once they understand that, they definitely don't perceive us as a threat.
Okay. Nice.
Really, it's more around you know, energy, attention. And the reason why I was waiting in my previous role for contracts to be reviewed is because they weren't at the top of the priority of legal teams, and lawyers are time poor. Especially when it comes to reviewing a simple NDA, it's never a number one priority.
Yeah.
So that's really what we're, you know, trying to do is delegate in a robust and safe framework. And we do have legal teams that use Legislate, and they love it because, not because it's a tool for non-lawyers, but because it's a really great way to create contracts.
Okay. I'm starting to piece it together better. And so you're helping everyone's time. You're not taking away from lawyers. You're helping them have more time on their hands.
Exactly. And then they have more visibility in, you know, what are their sales teams doing?
Because
again, you know, if one of those teams goes rogue and decides to, you know, take an issue themselves, in a typical environment, they wouldn't know unless something happened. And because we track everything, we've got the data, you know, businesses that use Legislate, they know exactly what's in their contracts.
Yeah. And does at first, do lawyers have that kind of confusion? Like, oh, you're trying to replace me or something like that? Or do they kind of get it straight up?
I think they get it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's sweet. And now is this the, I remember reading on you, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, but is this the first company that you're founding, and but you've worked at startups before, or have you started companies before?
So this is my first company. I'm a first-time founder, and before Legislate, I was working at a startup. So I've only ever worked in startups.
Nice. So what's kind of like your path look like?
My what? Sorry.
Like your career path. What's it been like to get you to Legislate?
Yeah, so it's quite short. I studied engineering, joined a startup in Oxford that was focused on machine learning, and spent 3 years there doing business development, and felt the pain point of, you know, having to wait for contracts to be negotiated. And sometimes contracts were being lost post negotiation because it would take so long that buyers would lose budget or buyers would get promoted. And I didn't want it to happen, you know, again. And then I thought, let's start Legislate to solve that problem. So it's now been two years and a couple of months.
Nice. So like right around the pandemic, huh?
Yes. Yeah. Which I think was quite interesting. I think it's definitely helped us because it shifted everyone's mindset to, okay, we need to do contracts online. Therefore, it's acceptable. So the timing has almost been perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. It is an interesting shift. And something I'm realizing is a lot of the people that I've spoken to, a lot of the guests have started something 2020 and onward. And it's like really interesting how that, for some reason, everyone just kind of got shaken up and felt like, yes, there are so many things that need fixing, and it's about time. Like everyone had so much time on their hands with lockdown. It's like, all right, let's do this business. Let's finally get into it. So what kind of inspired you to take that leap and take that jump?
So, I mean, I was inspired before COVID was a thing, and I just happened to, you know, when I was leaving the previous company and kind of working towards my exit, you know, just ended up that was exactly when lockdown started. But I think, you know, the inspiration was I was losing contracts post legal negotiation. And these were big enterprise contracts where it took, you know, months to find the prospects and, you know, build a relationship and then convince them that, yeah, they've got budget and we're a right solution for their problem. And post procurement, giving the green light, we were losing contracts because it would just be so long. It'd be a total process of maybe 6 months, 12 months, and buyers, you know, they get promoted, they leave jobs, they lose budget, they lose interest. And I just thought, what if we could actually compress that time down to, you know, weeks or even days? And I understand that contracts create friction by design, and there's a benefit to that because sometimes these big businesses like to move slowly, and if it doesn't quite survive time, then maybe there's a reason. But I feel that for so many other contracts, for example, hiring an employee, if it takes you 2 weeks to send out an offer letter, then you're probably going to lose that opportunity.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's a lot of contracts that we can just reduce the time it takes to A, generate, and B, you know, send them out. And whilst we're not necessarily trying to optimize for speed of signature, we feel like we are an efficient platform. And really where we want to optimize is really around because we can surface the key terms and the key data in the contracts.
Yeah.
Then also help optimize the party's understanding of what it is they're signing.
Sweet. Yeah, that makes sense. I totally get the problem as well, because I work at a cybersecurity startup on the sales side, and these like enterprise contracts take a good bit of time. And that what you're mentioning, well, time kills all deals. And what you're mentioning, I see present all the time. Like, for example, the someone you have a contact in the company that's really vouching for you. But a lot of times in IT, like people move around very common every 2 years. And so you could be like really close to this one contact, but if you don't really meet other people in there, the deal will get killed off if they leave, go somewhere else. Seen it happen so many times, as well as like you're talking in a meeting. You're like, okay, let's get an NDA in place, you know, for security. That's a big one for us. And then all of a sudden the meeting's over and you're no longer top of mind, and it all just like shuffles through, and then it has to go through their legal team. So yeah, I mean, what you guys are doing is really awesome. Thanks.
Thank you.
What have you been, what kind of like habits or routines have you developed as a founder? Does it differ from when you were an employee?
I think for sure. I think when you're an employee, when you sign off, that's that. And I mean, unless you know you want to, you get, you know, engaged,
yeah,
maybe a specific deal or a specific project, then maybe you will kind of go above and beyond. Whereas I feel like when you're a founder, you've never made it until you've made it. So you are ultimately always focused on the business, growing the business. There's always so much that can be done. And I think that the key habits that I have are really more just around what time I wake up and what time I go to the office and what time I, you know, go to bed. And I feel like that is, you know, really important, because there is that routine of always waking up at the same time, always getting to the office at the same time, and leaving at the same time, which means that even if most of my time is working or pushing the business or doing anything, because it is within that framework, it's normal.
Yeah.
And I can just kind of, you know, keep pushing.
And how do you switch off? And if so, how do you switch off? Like, do you, I guess what I mean is like when you leave the office, do you kind of give yourself space to breathe, or are you like usually in work mode?
No, I mean, I think I'll always stay connected, if that makes sense, because anything can happen at any point. And I think it is important that someone monitors. But I feel like I give myself a bit more of a break at the weekend. But I also feel like as the business has grown from just myself to now a team of 12, I can give myself a bit more time off. But I feel like there are always going to be key milestones that we want to achieve. And until those milestones are achieved, then it's difficult to switch off. Even if I wanted to, it's difficult.
Do you have co-founders, or was it just you in the beginning?
Yeah. So it's just me, which maybe also makes it harder.
Yeah. Interesting. How is that? Is that a tough burden to bear sometimes? Or do you wish you had someone to kind of go back and forth with?
I think in the early days, yes, but that's why it's important to have mentors and, you know, supportive investors. And then in the end, I think, you know, it means that I can make decisions faster. So I wouldn't necessarily change anything, but if I did start another business, you know, after obviously the Legislate success, then I'd love to have a co-founder.
Yeah. I mean, hey, this is your first go of it. You got plenty more to go.
Yeah.
Is that your, I mean, I guess you don't have to talk about it if you don't want to, but is that your plan, like to grow this thing, have an exit, and then go start something else? Or
I'm not necessarily sitting my eyes on starting anything else. But I think, you know, I want to grow Legislate as much as we can, and you know, we'll see where that goes.
Yeah. That's pretty sweet. Have you raised capital?
Yeah. So we, I don't know what the exact conversion is to dollars, but just over maybe $1.5 million.
What was that like? The whole fundraising process. I hear, is it different over in the UK than it is in the US? Someone told me it's like harder. Sorry. Someone told me it's like harder in Europe, but I'm not sure. I'd like, that's just probably a rumor, honestly.
I don't know, because I haven't raised in the US, but I feel that, you know, convincing anyone to give you their money is always going to be a bit complicated, especially in the early days. And I feel like the only way to really make it work is to be very targeted with the investors that you reach out to, whether it's interest, fit. And then I think the second aspect is, how do you convince them that you're the right company, right team, right idea, right market? And I feel like, because there are so many things that investors look out for, one of the best ways is ultimately to make them want you through, you know, whatever it is that you can do to create some FOMO, and whether that's kind of, you know, having their portfolio companies talk about you, whether that's having their friends or, you know, investor friends talk about you. It's just, you know, doing what you can to plant seeds and create that FOMO, I think, which ultimately is how fundraising can be effective.
And what tip would you give to someone who's about to start fundraising right now on how they could create that FOMO?
Well, I think it's really, you know, just speaking with your network. And, you know, the more friendlies you can speak to, the more you'll kind of, first of all, refine your pitch. But ultimately, there might be one who does get excited, because really, investing is emotional and you need someone to be excited. And, yeah, you know, FOMO is one way of getting other people excited. But as soon as you have that, you know, lead who's excited, then they'll naturally, you know, speak about you, etc. So I think it's just speaking with people that know you or know of you or can kind of pinpoint a track record that they can relate to and that they respect.
Yeah.
And then once you've got that, then you can scale.
That's pretty sweet. And now you mentioned you have 12 employees. What do you look for when you're hiring? Wait, are you doing the hiring first?
Yeah. I think, you know, obviously competency is key.
Yeah.
Everyone that we hire has to do some form of test, but then afterwards it's more just around, you know, culture fit and also, you know, what are their long-term goals and how can we help them get there? So, yeah.
What's been your favorite part of this whole process? You've been doing this by yourself. Like you don't have someone that's like, oh, you take care of, you know, the finances, I'll take care of hiring, you do the fundraising. Like, it's been all you. What's been some of the process of starting a company that's been your favorite, and what's been some of the process that's been a bit more of a challenge?
I think hiring is always a lot of fun at the beginning, but then it just does get a bit, I wouldn't say exhausting, but it is a bit tiring.
Yeah.
At the end, but it's always, you know, enjoyable. I think getting new customers is always enjoyable, and especially receiving positive testimonials is always great. Obviously, negative testimonials are they're less nice, but ultimately they do help you grow, which is great.
Yeah.
And
a lot to learn from the bad stuff.
Exactly. And I think every day is unique, and I think that's one thing that I do like, is every day will be different.
Yeah, that's a good outlook. Every day is unique, and helps you stay present. What would you say to someone who's hasn't taken the plunge yet to start a company? They're on the fence. They have the idea. They know what they want to do, but they just, I don't know, they have that fear coming. What would you say to someone like that?
I think ultimately starting a company is irrational, but there are rational steps and decisions you can take to go forward with it. You know, first of all, do you have savings? Second of all, do you have, and it's not that you need savings, but it's just around, you know, creating that safety net. And that safety net, you can create it, whether it's with your own savings, whether it's through angels that are willing to write that first check without doing much due diligence. And I feel like if you can, you know, generate 6 to 12 months runway to prove your idea with an MVP, and you know, then I think then you should consider, you know, going through with it. But the other great thing though about starting a software company today is there are so many no code or low code solutions out there that you could probably mock up an MVP quite cost effectively and without, you know, any co-founder or anyone. So I think it's a balance of, can I prove the MVP now? But you know, how do I create that safety net? And it's part of the safety net. It could be savings, it could be angel funding, it could be an MVP, but it's just, creating that safety net.
And I take it you're a coder?
So I not 100% am a coder, but I did code the first version.
Nice. What was that like?
It was intense, but I was also learning how to code with some consultants. And so ultimately they helped me learn how to code. And then, they would work during the day and I'd work during the day and at night. And that was, I think, quite motivating, because when you don't have any customers, obviously you want to get customers as quickly as possible, and you can't get customers until you have a product. But knowing that there is no client pressure, it was quite nice.
Yeah, that is very true. What language were you learning at the time? And now I'm guessing you have, did you hire on developers? Was that like
So half our team is in software development.
Okay, nice, sweet. And then the other half, legal?
Legal, sales, marketing.
Yeah, there you go. So have you ever had moments when, so you've been doing this for like two and a half years, do you ever face like burnout? Do you ever get times where you're just like really stressed and it's becoming difficult?
It only ever happened once when I was still by myself. But back then, it was really 24/7 times 365 days a year.
What drove you to keep going?
Knowing that if I screwed up, I would have lost my investors their money.
So you got investors when it was just you pretty early on?
Yeah, some small angel funding, but it was enough for me to, not want them to lose their money. And also I felt like I had my reputation at stake and I really wanted to be an entrepreneur. And if it failed then that quickly, then I'd probably never get the same opportunity to start a company.
Oh, wow. So you had some deep motivation. You were like, I'm going to do this no matter what. And it just kept you going.
Yeah.
Dude, that's pretty awesome. The fact that you got the investors early on and that really fueled you. It's not very often you see that.
Well, thank you.
How did you deal with that stress? Did you just push through and keep going, or did you have things you like to do?
At the time, there was a golf range not too far from where I lived, and I would go there at weekends just to whack the ball. But I think it was just, catching up with the investors and going for walks that would help. But it was definitely not a super healthy part of my life, but a necessary evil.
Yeah. And were these investors kind of like the mentors you mentioned earlier?
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you find them? Like, how did you find mentors?
So they were investors in the previous startup I worked at and then followed my progress. And when I said I wanted to start this company, they were pretty keen to back me.
Okay. So where did you join at this other startup? Like what, how early on?
Yeah. So I joined as an intern when it was just the CEO and one or two developers, and then moved full time into business development. And the team, when I first started, it was just CEO. Then when I left, the team was about 30. So I did see the company grow quite a bit, and they were well funded, lots of experienced leadership. So I definitely learned a lot.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. Yeah, it must have been nice going from like intern to seeing a company grow like that.
Yeah. I learned a lot, and I definitely wouldn't have had the idea or, you know, even know how to start a company had I not done that.
How did the leadership encourage you when you kind of went on to do your own thing?
So, I left on good terms with the CEO, and he supported me and my decision. And we kind of agreed that I could stay a bit longer at that company. I could basically work on the idea in parallel of staying a bit longer, which created another safety net for me, which is great. So I think I just was very honest and open with them, and they understood, and you know, they were great at supporting me, and today I'm pleased to say they're one of our customers.
Oh, really? Nice. And it seems that a big important thing for you starting on early was kind of having that safety net. It seems like you kind of built a couple to catch you along the way should something happen. But I mean, you didn't even need them. It doesn't sound like you kept going.
Well, it's all in the head.
True. So it kind of affected your confidence. You felt like you could take a bit more risks because you had these kind of nets to catch you if you fell.
Exactly. And I think, risk is all about being able to measure what can happen. And really, people shouldn't be afraid of risk. They should be afraid of uncertainty.
Yeah.
So I think safety nets, you can measure. Whereas if you don't have a safety net, then it's really difficult to measure.
Yeah.
To
me, it's always been those safety nets are the difference between a risk and a gamble. You don't really want to be taking gambles because they could go anyway.
Yeah.
What's the biggest risk you've taken?
In my life, I guess maybe starting the company. But, as we've just discussed with the safety nets, it might seem like it wasn't such a big risk. I think now the next big risk will be our next fundraise. And I it's not that it's a risky thing to do, but I feel like there's leading up to that fundraise, the company needs to be in a certain position, which means that sometimes you do need to maybe accelerate a bit. And it's kind of when you are accelerating, then you just never know what might happen.
Yeah, makes sense. Now you mentioned a little earlier that you like to go on jogs in the morning. What kind of started that?
My mom saying I was fat.
Moms have a way of just telling you the truth straight up.
Yeah, but I do enjoy it.
Helps you with the stress?
I think so. Yeah.
And you have, okay, so you said you also like to golf. What, when did you start golfing?
Maybe 10, 12 years ago, but, on a very ad hoc basis. And, I think when I went to the driving range, it was more because it was there and I could, as opposed to something that I, went out of my way to do.
I get it. Anything else? Did you grow up playing any sports? Anything else like that?
Tennis, but I think I played too much tennis, so I didn't enjoy it that much. I don't enjoy tennis much now. Yeah.
Was it? Were you like very competitive early on, and it just kind of tainted it for you?
Yeah.
Happens. I've seen that happen a lot.
Yeah.
All right, Charles. Well, thank you very much for coming on. It's been a pleasure having you. Now I just have a couple closing questions, and with that, you can plug away your stuff. You can tell people where to find you, and then we'll be good. So first of all, what kind of music do you listen to?
It's actually funny because I used to only listen to, top 100 or top 10 because I didn't have the time to curate playlists. But since listening to podcasts, I'm really struggling to listen to any music. It's very bizarre.
So what kind of podcast do you listen to?
My favorite podcast is a podcast called Panic with Friends by Howard Lindzen. He's a VC who talks with founders and other VCs, but started his podcast when the markets were crashing during lockdown. And he has a great sense of humor and doesn't take himself too seriously. And I think that just creates a great podcast.
Yeah. I'll check it out. Actually, I really do like VC podcasts where it's, I really like, one of my favorite things about podcasts is listening to experts in the space who also have a prior relationship talk to each other, because you get not only insider info, but it's like a pleasant listen and it's good. One that comes to mind, that's an example a friend told me, is called Smartless. It's okay. Three actors, actually. It's Will Arnett, Sean Hayes, and Jason, oh, I'm forgetting his name. He's the guy who's the main character in Ozark, if you've ever seen that show. But there are like three actors, very good friends, very funny. And it's so great to hear like what the acting world is really like on the inside. Or another one would be the All In podcast. I feel like you've heard of that. The VCs there talking, because like they're friends. It's funny to hear them joke around like high school kids, but also they're like some of the top investors in the world. So I really like stuff like that. I'll definitely check that one out. What about any shows or movies? Do you watch anything?
I watch what's on Netflix. I don't necessarily have a favorite, but I'm just your classic Netflix viewer.
That's pretty sweet. And any books you're reading right now?
I wish I read more. I feel like since being a founder, it's really absorbed a lot of my energy and attention. So I do struggle to read, but my favorite book is Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss.
I love that book. That's a really good one. Yeah. To anyone listening, I highly recommend. What was one of your favorite parts? Because I know what lesson sticks out to me. What was one of your favorite parts?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, it definitely isn't, you know, the most intellectual book. And obviously, you know, when I say it's my favorite book, it's really because I'm quite a practical person, and it really helped me in my early days in my career to take risks or even just understand more about negotiation. And I think the moment which stood out for me was when he lays out the going for the no, and you know, there's one line emails, have you lost interest?
Yeah.
I loved that I could implement it in my sales process, and I just, you know, would almost have like the timer to see, okay, you know, how quickly will I get my response? And it would always be minutes. So I think that's kind of what puts it out, and I really enjoyed.
That's cool that you implemented it, and it was you got to see it work in real life. Yeah,
it doesn't always work, but I'd say, you know, 3 out of 4 times it does.
Hey, that's a really good success rate for sales emails to anyone who cold emails and cold calls out there. The one for me was the difference between you're right and that's right. When you're talking to someone and they say, oh yeah, you're right. It's more of like you're right. Like, I get that you're saying that, but like, I don't really believe, versus that's right. They're more bought into what was just said. And that's kind of changed a lot of how I talk to people. It's a good book. And finally, where can people find you?
So the best way is to find us on our website, which is, maybe going to be in the show notes, but www.legislate.tech. And LinkedIn, Twitter, those are our main channels.
Yeah, I'll throw them in the notes. And a last quick thing is, if someone's looking for your services, what kind of person are you looking to work with? And yeah, I'll throw everything in the show notes so that the people that can find you will find you.
Great, thank you. So the main contracts for small businesses are employment, consultancy, and maybe internal policies like anti-money laundering, etc. So any small business that has a growing employee base that is struggling to track the data in the contracts, is struggling to just locate contracts, is struggling to issue out new contracts fast enough, then they're kind of our ideal customer.
Yeah, some do come to mind. I'll throw them your way. I know it's like the tedious contracts, the ones that are repeatable, tedious, and kind of fall to the bottom of a lawyer's priority, but are still important to operate these businesses.
Exactly.
Sweet. All right. Well, it was great talking to you, and have a great rest of your day.
Yeah. Thank you. You too.